Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, Maseches Bechoros Daf Gimel. We are holding on Gimel Amud Aleph, three lines from the top of the Avad Mesayo L'Rish Lakish. This connects back to the Braisa we learned yesterday. One is not meant to sell an animal, a heavy animal, working animal, like cattle, to a goy, for many concerns. Firstly, this time he's selling it to him, and it actually belongs to the goy, so he could work it on Shabbos. Next time he might loan him or rent him. And if it's a Jewish-owned animal, and the goy is working with it on Shabbos, that's an issue. So, for those reasons and others, Rashi brings another reason, because you're depriving the animal of resting Shvisas Shabbos, which it will do while under the Yid's care. So for all those reasons, one may not sell. And if he does, the Raisa tells us that he has to redeem, he has to get it back, even at great expense. And this is right to Rish Lakish. Mesayel Rish Lakish, Damar Rish Lakish. Every Rish Lakish teaches us as well. Hamoicha b'him agas le'b'kechum, a person sells an animal to a goy, kainzin oiso, we penalize him. Ada sora b'dameo. Up to 10 times its value. He's got to be willing to lay out that much to get it back. So the guy's not willing to give it back for its fair value. So he has to be willing to spend $1,000 for a $100 animal to get it back and put it back under his care. Now, this amount, 10 times as much, is that dafka? Is that literal? I love dafka. Is it just a figurative number? You must be willing to really go all out. And perhaps even more than 10 times, or perhaps not that much. It's just an expression to say, look, you have to really give it all you got. Dafka or lav dafka? Exact or not? Toshma, it comes at right. From a similar halacha, so here we speak about selling a behem agasa to a goy. Next comes a fellow who sells a Jewish slave, a Jewish servant, to a goy, which is a no-no because it deprives the eved of the opportunity to do mitzvahs, to be in a Jewish household. So that's also an issue, and you have to redeem him, even at great expense. Toshma, Domar Rabbi Shimon Levi, we have a brisa. Hamecher av doy lo eved kichavim. Sorry, we're talking about a eved Kanani, a goyish slave. Right, so under his care, he'll have the opportunity to do mitzvahs. He's mechayev to do mitzvahs like a woman. But if he sells him off to a goy, there goes his opportunity. Hamecher avdoy lo eved kichavim koinsin oisoy admeya b'damav. In this case, it's 100-fold. Has to lay out 100-fold to get him back. If the new owner is unwilling to do it for less, the fact that the halacha now changes, it goes up from 10 times to 100, would indicate to us that in fact these numbers are accurate. Otherwise, why would the halacha now switch numbers if it's just a figurative amount in any case? So it sounds like by the animal it's 10 times, and by the eved it's 100 times as much, because it's worse off. It's a person, you're depriving him of mitzvahs, right? So does that confirm that in fact these numbers are precise? No, says the Gemara, Shani eved, perhaps by the animal it's just a number. The reason why by the eved we switch it to 100, because there it is exact. There, it's a real big deal what you're doing. Shani Eved, the Kol Yom of a Yom, because every single day that he's under the new guy's, owner's care, Mafka Le Mitzvah, you're depriving him of the opportunity to perform mitzvah. So there, certainly, we penalize you to that extent. But by the Behema, who says you really have to spend time 10 times as much? If you could the Amri, now there's another version of this whole discussion, which actually flips around the numbers. Rish Lakish, Hamoicher b'him agas le'evet kechavim, by the animal sold, it's koinsin oisoy ad, listen to this, ad mea b'damea. He must be willing to spend 100 times the value of the actual animal to redeem it from the goy. And the question on that is, Tanan, we have the Brisa that we excerpted before, right? That we quoted before. V'nosin l'mekabolo. Abashin Rashai, if he hands over his animal to a goy in a Kabbalah arrangement where the goy is the caretaker, raises it, they split the profits, right? Even though you're not supposed to do that. Koin Tanoise adasara bedama bedameo. Here, we force him to spend 10 times as much, up to 10 times the value to get it back. And the question is, how does that fit with Rish Lakish, who cited the number 100? Says the Gemara, big difference between selling, which is Rish Lakish's case. Mechira paskomane, that is a full disengagement from the owner. So he's fully giving it away. In that case, we certainly penalize you to the full extent, 100 times as much. Kablonos, whereas the Brisa, which is speaking about a Kablonos arrangement, where technically there really isn't a transfer of ownership, of actual ownership. The Yisrael owner is still retaining ownership, it's just that the guy is looking after it and taking care of it. It's not really a true disengagement, a true sale, in which case we don't come down that hard on him for doing so. So now comes the question again. This new figure of 100 times, Dafka, I love Dafka, is it exact or not? Toshma, it comes right from the case of selling the Eved, where there it's down to 10 times. Toshma, Dom Rav Shimon Levi, right? So according to this version in the Gemara, by the animal it's 100 times, by the Eved it's merely 10. Dom Rav Shimon Levi, Amecher Avdu Akum, right? He sells off the Eved to the Eved Kacham, Kainsen Oisi Adasar Vedamov. Here the penalty is up to 10 times the value. Now, how could that be? That the selling of the animal, which is not a person, which is not really involving outright mitzvah performance, should trigger a 100-time-fold knas, whereas selling a person, selling an eved, is merely 10 times. Says Rashi, apparently, the 100 number by the behemoth is not dafka. It's not an exact number. It's just a figurative amount saying, listen, you got to go all out to do it. Otherwise, it wouldn't really be consistent with the number. Says the Gemara, Shani Eved Lo Yechadar Li. No, perhaps it is exact. By the animal, he must be willing to spend 100 times as much. The reason why it's only 10 by the Eved, because look, after he pays off this ransom for the Eved, he's not going to get him back. As discussed at length in the Gemara Gittin, for reasons there, that the Eved goes free. So since he's not getting it back, we can't come down that hard on you. And therefore we suffice with the penalty of up until 10 times. As opposed to the behemoth, where after he spends this exorbitant amount, he's going to get it back, so at least he's gaining that much. So therefore we come down even harder and we compel you to spend up until 100 times as much. So you must be willing to spend up to $10,000 for a $100 animal. Whereas by the Eved, it's only $1,000 for the $100 Eved. Ask the Gemara, and this is based on the fact that you're retrieving that behemoth, which gives you the $100 value back. So, okay, so why are you going up to $10,000? So instead of compelling him to do $1,000 for the $100 animal, go up to $1,100 to account for the fact that he's getting it back, which gives him that $100 gain. But not $10,000. Behemoth, my time. Why are you adding by the behemoth? Because it's going back to him, so he gets that extra value. So we should penalize him one more unit, which means instead of 1,000, 1,100, not 10,000. Elo says the Gemara, I'll tell you why the numbers are so, there's such a disparity between the 100 time fold by the behemoth and 10 fold by the Eved. Elo Eved Milsele Shchichahi. How often does a person sell his Eved to the guy? It's not a common thing. Animals come and go all the time, but avadim is, it's not such a thing that you transfer from one person to the next. And we know that the Chachamim did not concern themselves with things that are not really commonly found b'chamis la'shchicha l'gaz rabbanon, so they didn't make a gzera to this extent, and therefore, they allowed him to get off with just 10 times as much, and that's it. Okay, so bottom line is, there are two items that one may not sell to a goy, an eved, and a behemoth gas. And if one does so, he has to redeem it and be willing to spend lots of money to get it back, up until 10 times its value or 100 times its value, depending on the various versions in the Gemara. Now, back to the Mishnah, where a person partnered, he was a partner with a guy on the donkey. The Chacham Aimrim called Zman Sheyada B'Kicham, this is in the Braisa actually, Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Yehuda holds that a limited partnership on the guy's account does not exempt the entire donkey from Bechor, whereas the Chacham say, look, as long as there's some element of ownership in the donkey, the donkey is now exempt from Pidya and Petr Chamor. What's the basis for the Machloikas? Amar Rabbi Yeshua or Amar Rabbi Yechanan, they're both based on the same Pasuk. They have different, interpretations of the Pasuk, which leads them to their respective positions. Ushnei Mikra'echa Darshu. The Pasuk says, Kol Bochor, right? Kol Bochor Bi Yisrael, which teaches us that only a Jewish-owned animal is obligated in Pidyon Petach Hamor. Kol Bochor Bi Yisrael. Now, Rabbanan Sabri, Rabbanan Seif, would only say Bochor without the add-on Kol. The word Bochor mixed as Bochor Mashma can mean even part of the Bochor. Right, so even if the Yid is a partial owner, that's sufficient to trigger the Chiyuv. Kos Rachman a Kol. But now the Pasuk added the word Kol. Kol Bechor. Kol means in its entirety. Adi Gekule. It has to be fully, totally, completely owned by the Yisrael. Anything less than that doesn't cut it. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Rabbi Yehuda goes the other way. He says Bechor, his starting point is the other side of the spectrum. He says Bechor means no, Kule Bechor Mashma means the entire Bechor has to be owned by a Yid. But now Kosar Rachman a Koil, when the Pasuk adds the word Koil, Koil can mean even a little bit of the entity, like a Kosho, right? Now Filu Koldu. So even if it's only partly Jewish owned, it's Chayiv in Bechor on that portion. Iboyisim, another way to learn the Machlok is to Kule Yam Bechor Ruba Mashma. All agree that the term Bechor can relate to even most of it. Doesn't have to be entirely owned by a Yid, but that's Bechor on its own. Now, with the add-on Koil, that's the question. Mar Sovar Koil Mashma L'mul Yosef. Rabbanan say, by adding the word Koil to Bechor, it's upping it. It must be totally and fully, completely owned by Yisrael. Anything less than that is Potter. Mar Sovar L'mul Yosef. Rabbi takes the other approach. He says Koil can mean, has a diminishing connotation. Even a little bit, even part of the Bechor is sufficient. Now, according to the Chachamim, where even a partial goy ownership would exempt, what's the extent of his ownership that is required to exempt? Does he have to own a significant portion? Does he have to own a life-dependent limb, let's say? What about a hoof? What about an ear? So we have three shitas. One is, even if it's a limited ownership on just the ear of the animal, which, if it was missing, it would make the animal blemish. It would be considered a balmum and unsuitable for a carbon, right? And by the way, this whole discussion relates not only to Pidyon Petach Hamor, the firstborn donkey, it relates to the firstborn kosher animal as well, which is Bechor, right? There are three types of mitzvahs on Bechor, right? The firstborn son, firstborn kosher animal, which goes to the Kohen, and if it's unblemished, it's going to be processed as a carbon, and we have the firstborn donkey, which has to be redeemed with a seh. The seh is given to the guy. So, even if the guy has a very limited ownership, even the heir, that would suffice to exempt the entire thing. Another shita says, no, it has to be something life-critical, like the heart, like the lungs. Another shita says, even if it's not a limb, which, if it were omitted, would make the animal like an avela, it doesn't have to be that extent. Even if his ownership extends to something which the animal depends on it for its trefa status. So let's say the hind leg that's missing, right? The animal isn't necessarily labeled as an avela. It's not as good as dead, but it's not going to live that long. It's a treif. So that's also enough. It's a critical element of ownership, which exempts the animal from bechor. Okay, so we have three shittas on that. V'kama tehei shutafos shulab kicham. What extent of ownership is required for the guy to exempt? V'tape tur min bechor, to exempt from bechor. Omer af huna, afilu ozn, even the air. Maskel Rav Nachman. Why does the guy owning the ear interfere? Imagine the ear is gone. Okay, just omit it. Take it out of the equation. For lemulay, the kohen can tell the guy, take the ear and have a nice day. Shekoil ozna chavazil, take your ear and go. Right, the animal can still survive good and well without it. And even if it's a, you know, bukhar balmum, okay, so it still belongs to the kohen. So why is that going to exempt? And therefore, chizda amar, the guy has to own a critical element within the animal, which if it's it would be missing, the animal would be an avela. For instance, says Rashi, the veshet, you know, a food pipe, etc. So the life force of the animal is in the hands of the guy. So it's considered guy owned. Rav Amar, not to that extent. Davash oisa oisa treifa. The guy's ownership extends to a limb, which, if it were gone, would render the animal a treifa, not necessarily an avela, but a treifa. Rashi says, "Kigoyin men kubel amala," the upper section of the hind leg. That is enough to exempt the animal due to the guy's part. Mike, admittedly, what's the machlekes about? Whether it has to be a very critical limb or a half critical limb? But treifa chaya. The question is about the longevity of a treifa. The one that says that if the guy's ownership pertains to a limb which, if missing, would make the animal a treifa, you know, that's enough, because once the animal turns a treifa, meaning if you were to remove that leg, the animal would be a treifa, and treifa and chai does not have much time to live, so it turns out that the guy's ownership pertains to something very critical, inherent to the life force of the animal, and that's enough to exempt it from Bechira. The one that says that, no, you have to have a really life-dependent limb, like the heart, or like the, right? Which, if it were gone, the animal would be a nevela. I will treifa chaya, but the treifa element isn't critical enough, because the animal could even live a long time, even if it was a treifa, so the guy's presence is not so critical. Okay. Amro Rabban Kamei Rav Papa. The Chachamim presented a theory to Rav Papa. How do Rav Huna? V'Rav Chista. V'Rav Alei Pligi. Perhaps this apparent, you know, difference of opinion between Rav Huna, who says even limited heir ownership, versus Rav Chista and Rava, who require more extensive ownership, perhaps there really isn't a machleket. They're speaking about different elements. Alei Pligi. Haboy. Habi'imoy. Rav Huna's heir ownership, that's on the actual bechor, the actual bechor. So even limited ownership prevents its kedusha, but they're speaking about the mother animal generating the bechor. Since it's removed from the actual bechor, there you need to have more intense ownership. Amul Rav Papa, what's the difference, he says, Maishna boy. What's the difference? Regarding the bechor itself, the be'inon kol bechor v'leka, you say an heir is enough because you need to have the full entire thing. You don't have it, it's missing an heir, which belongs to the guy. So it's exempt. Imoy nami be'inan kol miknecha tizacha. The same with the mother. Kol miknecha, all your sheep, your flock tizacha, which produces, you know, the male. So the mother animal has to be kol, has to be completely yours. But like, you don't have it if it's partially owned by the guy, even the heir. Elish, no. Apparently, there's no room for distinction, and there is actually a machlekes. Rav Huna says the guy owning the heir, whether the mother or the offspring, exempts, and they disagree. Maskeflo Mabravash. Fine, so let's say the guy owns, you know, even the heart. So what? Why would that interfere? Okay, I understand the animal can't survive without it. But it's still a living being. Maishno minefalom. Why is it different than a miscarriage? Even though they're not viable, it's not going to live, right? Kachi. If it's a firstborn, it has Kedushas Bechira. Even though it doesn't have longevity. So, likewise, in our case, even if you were to discount the heart, you've got to get it out of the equation, in which case the animal can't really survive. So what? The fact is, it's a live animal and should have Kedusha. Dom, as we learned, Peter Sheger Behema, which is the Lashon of the Pasuk. Sheger means what the animal discards, even unviable offspring. And the drush is Sheger Shegar. It dwells. It dwelled in the Behema, the mother animal. That's enough to give it Kiddush, even though it's not viable. It doesn't have longevity. So why is longevity a condition in generating Kiddush's Bechor? Says the Gemara, big difference. You know what the difference is? There's no interfering element. There's no goy involved. I understand the unhealthy offspring is not really slated for long-term survival, but the fact is there's no other element interfering. There's no chulim, there's no non-kedusha element involved. And therefore, karina bubi behema. Kol bachar, so we call it kol bachar, it's considered a bachar. Hacha, as opposed to our case, where there's a guy involved, and a guy's presence interferes with the Kedushas Bechor. And since his presence is felt in the Behema, he owns a significant portion, right? Since there's a guy's involvement, that's like the Chulin part, there's a non-Kedusha element here, so we can't consider it Kol Bechor, it's missing in its totality, and therefore it's not Kodesh. So we're working with the Shitas Chachamim that even a limited partnership, even a goy's partial ownership exempts it. What extent of ownership? We have three Shitas, the heir, perhaps more. What happened? Rabbi Lazar, he missed the session of Beis HaMedrash. He missed the Seder, Lo Yal BeMedrash. Nope. He wanted to catch up on what he missed. Ashkechel Rabbi Asi, he encountered Rabbi Asi. Amal, he says, what I missed today in the yeshiva, my Omer Rabban BeMedrash, what did Rabban say in BeMedrash? Amal, he says, I'll tell you what. We turn to this. Hachi Amar Aviyechan. Aviyechan told us two things. First of all, Afilu Mumkal, regarding a guy's ownership that exempts, even the heir, which if it were missing, would render the animal a blemished animal, that's significant enough of guy ownership, which exempts the animal. Number two, he told us as well about this nan, regarding the Mishnah that we learned. It's a strange phenomenon. Rachel Shiodim in Eis. So we're talking about a firstborn kosher animal, which is considered Kaddish. But let's say the offspring is dissimilar to the mother in its appearance. So we have a Rachel or sheep, Shiodim in Eis, that gave birth to something which appears like a goat. I mean, they're both technically, both types, both varieties are candidates for Kedushas Bechor, but here it's an anomaly. We have an offspring dissimilar to the mother, or the exact opposite. Ve'ez Shiodim in Rachel, we have a sheep that gave birth to a goat, gave birth to a sheep. Pitura ben Abachoyra. That doesn't qualify for Bechor, it's off the chart. It's not a normal animal. But Ve'meshva Mishasimonin, Chayev. If it somewhat resembles the mother, then it's Chayev. But, says Rabbi Yechanan, I want to tell you, even though it's technically Kaddish, it's labeled as a Bechor, but it's a Mum Kavua. It is considered a blemished, and a seriously blemished animal, and it is Lishchot, and therefore Lishchot Olav, you can shecht it at home. It's not regarded as a carbon. Mum Kavua, Havi Lishchot Olav. And that's Rabbi Yechanan's add-on to the mission. You should know that it's a serious Mum, and yeah. Bishloima Mum Kal. So let's analyze both halachas. The first one was that if the goy owns even part of the animal, Mum Kal. So Bishloima Mum Kal. So we certainly understand his message on that one. Kamash Malan Kedarfuna. His point was to promote Rav Huna's opinion. As long as the goy owns even the heir, which if missing would render the animal a Baal Mum, even though it's not a serious moment, it's a mumkal, it's a superficial blemish, that's enough. It's a serious enough portion of the animal, if owned by the guy, exempts it from the Kedushas Bechor. Kamash Mumkta Rafu. Lafuk, as opposed to the other opinions, which require a more extensive ownership, you don't need that much. Lafuk Ibn Rav. Okay, so the first halacha is clear. El Mumkabo Mai Kamash Malon. But what was he teaching us in the second point? An offspring which is totally dissimilar to his mother is considered permanently, seriously blemished, right? Etc., etc. What's the chiddush there? What's he teaching us? That if there's a deviation from the norm that constitutes a blemish, that's old news. We know that from the Mishnah. Tanina, we have a Mishnah, actually, Maseches Bechoros. Upiv dami kishal chazir, ha'izimum. If you have the Bechor, who's born looking, his mouth, his lips look like a swine, it's a deviation, it's a mum. So we already know that from the Mishnah. No, perhaps you can say, well, that's way worse, because, you see, a chazir is a type of animal which is not bound to the Kedushas Bechor. It's not in the system of Bechor, so perhaps that's why. That type of deviation to something which is off, something which doesn't qualify, that's a reason for exemption. Chitema, perhaps you can say, that's a different case than our case. He's looking like a swine which in its type has no Bechor, so he's certainly going to be considered Balmum, as opposed to our sheep born by a goat or vice versa, where whether it's a sheep or a goat, that type is Kadosh in Bechor. So that I wouldn't know from that Mishnah, if not for Rabbi Yechon telling us that it's considered a serious mum. Well, that's also known from a Mishnah, Hanami Tanina. A deviation to something which is still within the family, to be considered, for that to be considered a balmum, that's already known from another Mishnah, Hanami Tanina. Listen to this, Aine Achas Gedoyla, Vachas Gatana. So you have a kosher, firstborn animal, a carbon, who has a supersized eye, or a undersized eye. And the Bryce explains, Vatana, Gedoyla means, what do you mean supersized? Gedoyla Gshal Egel. So he's a plain little sheep, and he looks like his eye, one of them looks like a calf, really huge. Now a calf is something which can be kaddish bebechira, right? He's not deviating to something which is tummy, right? And regarding the shrunken eye, uktana, uktanuk shal avas look like a duck. Now bishlam uktanuk shal avas, I understand the second example. Ein b'mina kaddish bebechira is appearing like a duck, so that doesn't qualify for bechira. That's really bad. Ela gedoyla, but in the first case where it's a supersized eye and it appears like a calf, kashal egel, el gedoyla shal egel, yesh b'mina kaddish bebechira. The eagle, in theory, is something which is kadosh b'bechira. So why is that? Render him a balmum. Elalav mishum namrina and kivin nishtani avalimuma. So clearly it's because any deviation is considered a mum. So why does Rabbi have to tell us this halacha again? It's already clarified in the Mishnah. Says the Gemara, no, lo mishum navali sarua. Perhaps from the Mishnah on its own, I would not know that simply deviating makes a mum. That's why I need Rabbi Yechon. The Mishnah, well, I would say, it's more than just deviation. It's sarua. The animal's limbs are disproportionate, non-symmetrical. That's the issue. He's got one big, one regular size, one small, one, right? Hachanan Mestar, I'll even prove to you that Mishnah is discussing this new, unique, so-called sarua, which is mentioned in the pasuk as well. It's none. Because look at the Mishnah there. It says, Mumen Egel, Ben Kvuin, Ben Oivrin, Poislin. So all the Mumen, all the blemishes that are tacked onto the animals, that relate to the animals, relate also to people. Meaning if a Kayin features any of these blemishes, he's unsuitable for service in the Mishnah. Yasser Alein Adam, but the Kayin has an advantage, has a strictness, has an added potential for mum, which is not considered a problem by an animal, only by a person, which is, Einav, suppose the Kayin's eyes are larger than normal, Shtein Gedolus, Shtein Ketanus, or smaller than normal. He's possible to do service. And the reason is, why is a person different than an animal? Why does this interfere with the Adam and not the Behemoth? Because Gabi Adam by the Kohen, it says, he has to match up with the rest of his brethren. He has to look like a baby. He can't deviate. Gabi Adam ish, mizera arin. He can't deviate from the norm. The Be'inon ish shave, bizarre shal arin. The Kohen has to appear like his brethren. Aval behemo, Shtein Dolis, Shtein Tanois, Namili Avimumah. Whereas by the animal, even if it deviates from the standard, his eyes, both of them are supersized, or both super small, that's okay. We have a mumma. So once that's established, let's go back. So why is one up and one down a problem? If deviation from the norm is not an issue, so ahas gedol v'achas ktana my time. What's wrong with one big, one small? Imishem shinui. Is it because he deviated? Because it's abnormal? It's not. That's clearly not an issue by a behemo. I feel staying gedol, staying ktana tsunamis. Then, if that was an issue, so forget a one up, one down. Even if they both match, they're both supersized or both super small, that would be a mum. And it's no, it's not. Only by an adam, because he has to be standard by a behemoth. It doesn't have to be standard. So what's wrong with one up, one down? El labishim nahavali surah. Must be. It's due to the surah label. It's a new, unique psul called surah. Disproportionate within the animal itself. It's non-symmetrical. That's the issue. Not that it's deviating from the norm. That wouldn't be an issue by a behemoth. It's only because surah. Okay? So that explains why Rabbi Yechanan had to come along and add that extra point. Look, a Rachel that gave birth to an Eitz or vice versa, there it's not Sarua. There's nothing inherently disproportionate about the sheep-looking offspring. It's just that he's deviated from the way his mother looks. He's in his appearance, he's different than them. And that's a new psalm. Says the Mano, no, not necessarily. So perhaps the issue with the supersized eye is because of deviation. In which case, that would cover Rabbi Yechanan's case as well, and would render his halacha unnecessary. And as to your question, we shouldn't have a mumma, and even a deviation, a plain deviation, considered a mumma by behema. As to your question, so why is that specific to one up, one down? What if they're both supersized? That wouldn't be an issue, because, you know, the animal had some good food, and now he's growing with leaps and bounds, and his eyes are, you know, expanding, or he had some rough times, and he's shrinking. But if it's one up, one down, that is a shinui. That's abnormal. Regarding your question, I feel staying doyla, staying tanis, if it's a matter of deviation, so even if they're both matching, they're both big or both small, it should be a problem. No. Hasam, there you can attribute it to, you know, super health or poor health. But if it's one up, one down, that's a true deviation. So again, it can very well be that deviation is an issue. In which case, Rabbi Yechon Halacha was really unnecessary, because we know that from the Mishnah there. Okay, Hasam Imachmas Priyusi Yisera. Because if it's one up, one down, look, what are you attributing it to? Priyusi Yisera? Abnormally super health, which is engendering this supernatural growth? Well, then it should manifest in both eyes. Tarvayu Boilum Ivra. They should both look, big. Imachmas Kishusa, on the other hand, if it's because he's having some rough days, Kishusi Yisera, you know, like a Paris, you know, meager, cows, because of weak health. Tarvayu boy, they should both appear weak and small. The fact that it's one up, one down indicates that it's not attributed to diet or health. Rather, it's a true deviation, and therefore it's a mum. Ha'igiyurt. There's a story of a woman convert whose brothers, who were goyim, entrusted her with their livestock to raise them and to look after them and to support the prophets. Davur master-in-law, Ache, her brothers would hand her over to her, Achayusa, their animals, Lebtuma, to feed them, to look after them. So basically, it's a joint venture, partly owned by a guy. What's the halacha regarding Bachar? Asoy l'kamed Rav, she approached Rav with a shiloh. Amelie says, don't worry about it, it's Potter. Despite Rav Yudah's opinion to the contrary. Less lay the chash l'alad Rav Yudah, we don't adopt Rav Yudah's opinion. The Amur says, that's obligated? No, we exempt it. Due to the goy's even partial ownership. The Amor who says, even a partnership with the goy's chayv, we disagree with that. And it's exempt. In fact, Rav Mori bar Rachel, who was named as such because his mother was taken captive, right? Whole story, Shmuel's daughter was taken captive, and this fellow interacted with one of the daughters, eventually converted, his name was Issachar Geyura, and they had this son, who was born actually after the father converted, but in order to spare him from discomfort, they did not attribute him to his father. And he was called after his mother, Amari Baruchel. Havila Yauchiyusa. So he had a flock of animals. And in order to circumvent the Bukhar issue, Havamach Nilodnai, he would sell, he would grant the heirs of the firstborn, animals to the guy. Now it wasn't in order to gain on the deal. In fact, he treated them as bechayrim. He wouldn't share them or work with them. And not only that, he gave them to the kohen. If you have a little kohen. So why did he do it? We'll see in a minute. Despite his strict observance of the halacha, v'kaloi, it diminished chayusa der Amari Baruchel, his animals died out. Ask the Gemara, first of all, why did he bother giving away the ears, if in any case he treated them as v'chimiyacha, if he was trying to save on the deal five, but v'chimiyacha da'osl, if in any case he treated them with kedusha, it wouldn't work them, he wouldn't share them, v'yavlu kehanim, he handed them to kehanim, so what was the bother of doing the whole, you know, ear business? Amai makna luludnayu, why did he give away the ears? He was super concerned that perhaps mistakenly somebody would use them. After birth, somebody would, unrealizing that it's a bechor, would use them as a regular animal. He wanted to avoid that issue, so he preempted the kedushas bechor by giving away the ear to the kohen, which exempts it from kedushas bechor. Dilma also, with our colleagues concerned, people might stumble and mistakenly use these animals. Yochi, if that's the case, he's trying to be super strict. Super Yerushalayim, my time, makolach yus damar barachas. Why does animal die out? What did he do wrong? The answer is mishum damafkul mekedusha sai, because after all, he deprived them of kedusha. He circumvented the system and prevented the kedushas bechor from applying itself to the animals, although he actually gave it to the kohen, so monetarily he gave it up, he didn't take anything, but there was no kedusha because of what he did. Ask the Gemara, what's the problem? Omar Ravida teaches us, mutal adam la talmum bebechor koydim shiyetz lavir oylam. One's allowed to do something similar. He sees it's a firstborn animal. He gets a surgeon to insert some sort of instrument and pricks the ear of the as yet unborn Bechor in order to blemish it so that when it's born, you can just shecht in the backyard without treating it as a carbon. So you see, you can circumvent the system. So what's wrong with selling the ear to a guy and circumventing the system? How's some big difference? How's some Makdushas Mizbeach Kamavkalei? When he blemishes it prior to birth, at most, he's preventing the kedusha of the mizbeach, of the korban, to apply itself to the firstborn. But it's still going to be a bechor to the extent that it belongs to a kohen. She's not going to cancel the system completely, as opposed to our story. Ha-ha. But the kedusha's kohen, the kohen's rights and claims to the Bukhar is still intact. He's going to give it to the Kohen. Hach, in our case, Hafilu Mekdusha's Kohen Kamafkali. Here, when he sold the ear to a guy prior to birth, he avoided even any Kedusha and prevented any Kedusha. Kedusha's Kohen, there's no relation to a Kohen here. There's no Kedusha's Bukhar at all on this behem. We've already said there's another shot to explain what happened and why it was problematic. Ramari Baruchel, Yodalaknu Yikinin Gomer. Theoretically, if you would have done it properly and it would be obvious and clear to all, it wouldn't be an issue. In fact, Rabbi Baruchel knew. He had the expertise in terms of how to halachically, how to transfer the heir to the goy. Rashi says he knew that in order for the kinyan to really take effect, the goy has to transfer some money. The kohen makes the kinyan through the goy. Makes the kinyan through kesef. That's the way. By us, we need mashiach, a physical possession. By the goy, it's about transfer of money. So you know how to do it. Problem is that for the outside observer, it's not so obvious what he did. Look, he sees the animal still sitting in Murray's backyard, not realizing that he made a transaction with the guy, right? So he sees no physical transfer and still sitting by Rav Marchi. Why is he parted from Bechor? It's very confusing. And he might draw erroneous conclusions that you can just, disregard the mitzvah of Bechor. Bechor, Elina Shachrina, and a fellow will walk by and see that there's no, they're not observing Bechor on this thing. Vazav Avid, and he'll follow suit. Vesav, and he'll figure of Mari, Milso David. Mari just did, some sort of agreement with the guy without actually halachically transferring ownership. And you can do that. Vazav Avid, it's going to come to Takola, to Mikshel, to Pitfall. If people draw the wrong conclusions and, will not do it properly. So that was the concern, and that's why he was punished by Hashemayim for being less than 100% careful in terms of impressions, in terms of, you know, public ramifications. Interestingly, Tosfos brings that nowadays we do this. Well, that's what we do. We sell the air to a guy to exempt ourselves from Bechor. So how do we do that? So he says, Mamshad, he says, is because we do it on the mother animal. So it's not directly on the offspring, not directly relating to the Bechor. He says, another reason, he says, we don't know how to do Rav Yudah's thing with the, we're not Baki, how to inflict a blemish, so that's not really an option for us. So he should have done it that way, but we don't have that option, so we do it this way. In fact, I must have mentioned it in the past, a wonderful, wonderful, pretty inspiring story regarding this matter. You know, they sell the farmers do that. The firm farmers, they sell the heir to the guy to avoid the Kedushas Bechor, which today we can't really attend to because we don't have Beis HaMikdash, we don't have, right? So there's this Rav in Eretz Yisrael who took it upon himself. He makes the rounds, goes around to, you know, the farms and tries to engage the farmers, irreligious farmers in Eretz Yisrael, to just, you know, sign on the paper, sign on to, you know, imakne, to grant a small portion of their heir or whatever of the calf, the mothers of the, you know, to the guys. This way, if there's a firstborn, it's not going to have Kedusha, we don't have to treat it accordingly, and, you know, and it's an easy thing, it doesn't cost any money, it's like Mechiras Chametz, right? So you go there, you sign, pick up the, you know, handkerchief, make a, you know, you empower the rough to sell it on your behalf, and you're done. So this fellow encounters this farmer, this animal raiser up in the north, and he got a little of Eretz Yisrael, and he offered him the deal. He says, you know, just sign on, and, you know, you'll do a good deed. So he's negotiating with him, and a time he got, you know, to actually do it, time he came back to do it, the farmer says to him, listen, sorry, Rabbi, you missed it. The cow already gave birth. Firstborn. So he says, what'd you do with it? That's a Bechor, that's Kedusha. He says, actually, it died. No, what'd you do with it? He says, I just threw it over the fence, you know, in the ravine over there where I throw my dead animals. You know, it happens in a farm that, you know, especially firstborns, they, you know, sometimes they're finicky, they're delicate, they you know, they die. So I threw it all over the fence. He says, how could you throw it? It's a Bechor, it's Kedush, you have to bury it. The farmer looks at him and says, bury? Chevra Kedush, that's for people. I never heard of saying bury an animal. Ah, he's laughing. The Rav's telling him what he means. It's important. You gotta treat it with Kedusha, with respect. And the farmer wasn't really hearing much of it. And okay. In any case, he signed on, you know, for the future. And he left the farm. Turns out the next day, as the farmer saying the story later, he says, next day, another calf gave birth, and the newborn died. Okay, I didn't make much of it. Threw it over the fence with the other one. Next day, same thing again. It happened 3-4 times. I started thinking to myself, you know, this is not the norm. This is not normal that it happens so often, consecutively like that. Boom, boom, boom. I started, you know, thinking through the Indian, you know, maybe the rabbi was right after all, maybe I did something wrong. And he says, you know what, just for curiosity, if you can go check by the fence and see what's doing in the cliff over there, and, you know, down there. And he takes one look, and he couldn't believe it. What do you see? Of all the other ones that he threw over the fence, gone. By the wild animals, by the, you know, the birds, the ravines, the eagles, you know, they all come, and not a bone, nothing, gone. Except for one. The Bechor. Intact. Skin, flesh, bones, untouched. Couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. In the animals. Wouldn't touch something which was holy. Now he realized. Yiddishkeit. It's a reality. It's real. Even in flesh and blood. In this world. Not just in Eil HaBa. Even the animals recognize that something has Kedusha you don't touch. He was so shaken by this experience. Right then and there, he says, you know what, I'm going to explore Judaism. And eventually he became Baal Tshuva, and he called a Rav, and he says, you're right, come teach me some Torah. He became a full-fledged Baal Tshuva because of a dead animal over the fence. Pilipline. This was related by Yitzchak Zilberstein in the Sefer. Okay, Yiddishkeit is real. Okay, back to the Summary of our daf, and I meant to sell the animal to a goy, nor an eved. If done, he has to go retrieve it at a pretty penny, whether it's 10 times the value, or even 100 times, depending on the case and on the version of the Gemara. An animal owned by a goy is exempt from bechor, according to the Shittas Chacham, even limited partnership, even limited ownership, and we paskin even the heir, as per the story of Amar Bar Rachel. Then an interesting halacha regarding a mum, kontra Rabbi Yochanan, if there's an extensive deviation from the mother, Rachel, she older than A's, or vice versa, that would be considered a mum kavua, which would allow shechita outside of Beis HaMikdash, because a deviation to this extent is considered a mum kavua. Okay, we discussed what we do nowadays regarding the animals that we raise to avoid entangling ourselves with the Kedushas Bechor, which is not very doable nowadays. We have the Gemara, the Tosfos. Okay, all the best to you, and Hatzlacha Rabba.